before I finished that part, right at that time, too, we had joined the Disciples of Christ Christian Church.
Who were you before that?
Wings of Deliverance. We was independent.
You called yourself the Wings of Deliverance because you're your own denomination?
Yes.
Only People's Temple was in it.
Well, we call ourselves People's Temple, but our organization was Wings of Deliverance. We were. And so we joined the Disciples of Christ Christian Church organization. And these people were really taken in by our humanitarian work, other free thing, but they didn't want to do anything on their own, so they would feel good about the fact that they had what they call pantry meetings, where people bring in canned goods and that sort of thing, and so they would bring them to us, or not bring them, I beg your pardon, they would ask us to come and get them.
The Disciples?
Different churches, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so they would feel good that they had helped feed the poor. Only they didn't have to deal with them, you know, because we had
to deal with them.
Yeah, we had the cooking of cabbage smell up during the services and all of that, and the poor derelicts and everybody coming through there. And so Arch and Ravina worked on that program. And I did a little bit. I was more in maintenance and that sort of thing.
Do you remember any incidents from that time that you could think of? I mean, there's things that happened that kind of might show what kind of a church it was or what, how Jim was operating. Or, you know, it might be a little bit...
At that particular time, all kinds of people were coming to see us or visit us or be there. You was wanting an incident.
It's just things that happen, kind of situations.
Yeah, well, people brought their children and left them. One little girl, they brought her there, and left her. I think her name was Vicky. She was about two and a half maybe, and left her on the church step. And then the mother comes back, I think, said something to Ravina. But anyhow, this child was in such a state that she had a coat. And she would sit and rock with that coat. Jim and Marston took her home and completely rehabilitated that child, got her out of that state that she was in, and the child was really coming along good. And so the husband and the wife decided to go back together. They had been split up. He was a drunk, and I think she was a prostitute. But the child was really doing beautiful. And they went to the court. They took Jim to court over that thing.
Why? He didn't want to give the child up?
Well, it was that. No, I don't think he wanted to give the child up because the child was blossoming. He wasn't selfish about the child. He would allow the child probably to go to somebody else rather than go back into that goddamn home and situation that she was. But the judge knew the background of these parents, these people, that every time there was a payday or he worked a couple days and they could get drinks, they would have a goddamn fight, and the child took the punishment of the thing. But anyhow, the judge awarded them the child, gave it back to them, and we found out not too much later. I think in the December part of that year, they had went out, and somewhere in Nebraska, somewhere I think it was, a place similar to Boys Town or something like that. one of those places like that. Vicki had been left. She had double pneumonia. She died there, and her folks left her there and went on. These were the kind of, which I don't think Marceline knew about that until Jim may have told her after that. But I mentioned it one time, and she said, I think she said, or I said it in front of him, I'm not sure. And he tried to spare the hurt for Marceline that the baby had died.
How long did they have the baby?
Had the baby about 4 months, 4 or 5 months. Or could have been a little longer. But anyhow, it was long enough that the child had found the security that she needed and began to blossom. He was talking about political things. There was an incident that, yes, at that time. Here's an incident I think you'll be interested in. There was a Presbyterian priest in Cincinnati, I think, or in Ohio. He had made a stand that all percentage of the wages of the working man's wages, a high percentage was going to the war effort. And he made a protest and told his people not to pay no more taxes. Well, they threw him in the can. And Jim suggested that we all write in defense of this man. And we did. Excuse me. We did, and wasn't very, just a little bit. Just a little time had passed, and every one of us was at rope, was subpoenaed. I think there was about 25 of us subpoenaed into the IRS.
And you were all writing to him personally?
Yes.
Just to say, in jail, he was in jail.
Yeah. And we were subpoenaed by the IRS.
The ones who wrote?
Yes. And and done a tax job on us several times, and this is where Jim attributes it to Ravina's craziness, but I attribute it to him.
I've
given the inspiration. She had all of our tax things in a big old. I don't know if you ever seen a soup box. You get a suit in a big square.
Yeah, I've seen that.
She just took that down there and dumped it right in the middle of that man's fist and said, I don't know why you're calling me down here. Said, there it is. Just looked through it. Said, you've looked through it enough and I'm tired. And just went nuts. And he said, I believe you, lady. He said, here, take all your stuff and get out of here. And that's when that particular thing had stopped. But you just had to be crazy.
Yeah,
like,
I heard that.
Like Jim's doing now, you know. When they push, you just got to come back nuts, you know, and push twice as hard as they did. As much as I was around then, whenever I was around him, he was usually reading every periodical that come out. He had a news broadcast on, and he was writing a letter. this sounds ridiculous. And he had a phone in one ear, trying to help somebody with their problems, all going on at the same time.
So he was communicating with people and listening to other what was going on in the world and dealing with individual, so forth,
right.
Back and forth.
as long as I've known him, he's never taken what we would say any kind of a time for himself. Just to have a layback day or a leisure day or he always impressed me, as I look back now, as it would be very unproductive just to do nothing.
I mean, he's always going.
Right. Now, like I said, he usually had a phone in his hand, be writing a letter, be listening to some news program, or reading some periodical.
His
house was like Grand Central Station. He always had at least 8 or 10, and most of the time more than that, people living with him in Marsland. Always had a house full of animals, and our basement full and the backyard full of taking in all the strays. And ever since I've known him, he was that way. Something just broke my memory when you said that. I just had a picture, a flashback on his house. He was asking about was he harassed and everything for all the things that he's doing. With all of this going on at his house and him trying to take care of business, like help people, listen to the news, be helping somebody on the radio and reading a periodical, to be astute with the news he wasn't listening to, or newspaper or something like that. People would, to harass, they would send the guy out with 10 ton of coal to deliver to his house, or send taxi cabs, or they would send florists with maybe 10 dozen roses that said that he'd ordered it, and that sort of thing. Harassment. And Jim would always figure it was an imposition on the driver or the people that got sent out there, and he would pay the taxi bills, and we took the coal a couple of times, and so many things of harassment. But always staying considerate and kind under the most dire pressure, and you've heard the expressions, trying the patience of Job, but I never saw him. He always fought the cause behind it, not the manifestation of the problem, but he fought the problem, which was capitalism. Which I wasn't astute to that much at that time. People being manipulated by the system.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever get angry at anybody in particular? Did he ever on somebody? It was more like, just the way things have fucked over people.
Right. I never saw him, never once saw him take no kind of vindictiveness out on an individual for them. He would try to shake them verbally by the nape of the neck for what was causing them to do certain things. Incidentally, and at that same time, we were in the front room one evening there, and the harassment was going on. But just before dark, I think it was. But anyhow, there was a little old lady with her Bible under her arm, put about a pound of sugar in the gas tank of his car. Which she thought that was her way of dealing with Jim Jones, which could outproduce and was doing more for Indianapolis than anybody had ever done before. But evidently, because the doctrinal points didn't jibe, she felt justified.
Did she know Jim Jones at all? Just was there?
I don't know whether she did or not. I know it of another time that some, I would say, a mercenary action took place, that they got a black man that was addicted. He was an alcoholic, and they give him a bottle or something to come to Jim Jones' door and stab him. And the man come up and he stabbed him. And what they were going to do is have the police come up at that time. And yes, yeah. But Jim was wise, pretty hip to what was going on, and he just got a, I don't think, too bad of a cut. He got stabbed, but it hurt him, but it didn't get him in the vital area, I don't believe. I forget where. But even though with the hurt, with the stab, and the whole setup thing, Jim told the brother that he was being set up and running through his backyard and out into the alley, and the police drove up and he said, we heard there was an incident. He said, no, there was no incident here. What are you talking about? Nothing's gone wrong. In other words, he could have felt vindictiveness for that man stabbing him, but he didn't. He always had his mind on what was ahead of a situation, and was able to look beyond it and see what was causing the situation, and knew that if that, you know, that old man wasn't about himself, and he had just been set up into a situation to be the fall guy and to be able to be the middle of a controversy. Well, here is a man that has defended the black people all through Indianapolis and winds up getting stabbed by one. See? And he wasn't about to let that happen. In other words, many of the things that he's talked about, see, we get our emotions and things confused and we are deterred off into to side issues a lot, and he's never been detoured by side issues. He's always been able to keep his eye on the goal and not be sidetracked by that thing, and let it, which would have been, you know, if they could have pulled that off, which would have been a hell of a blow at that particular time, because the struggle was at a heightening situation there in Indianapolis, and it would have been a victory for them, and he did not allow that. He did not allow the capitalists to have that kind of a victory.
I had come in Delaware. No. In an economic bind, and I had I was in trouble on a loan. I'd bought a house, a kind of an apartment house, and Jim got Lynetta and him, and they took the note and paid the thing off for me to keep me from losing it, and which I thought demonstrated a tremendous concern for me as an individual. I mean, my parents were well-to-do. I mean,
they didn't help me.
No. My folks would not help with anything, and so he bailed me out, and but that, I wanted to get that portion in there. I don't know where I was, himself to be sidetracked by what people wanted to project. In other words, he knew himself, was doing a tremendous amount of introspection where he knew himself, and whatever people said, he did not allow that to interfere with the goal that he had set in mind for what we were about. And about this time, I don't know whether I had told you that he had become the first formed the Mayor's Commission on Human Rights and become the head of that. Charles Boswell, did I tell you about that?
Yeah. You know, we have a lot on that.
But anyhow, he was harassed by everybody. He integrated the police department. He integrated some of the big monopolies, Bell Telephone, where they had no competition whatsoever. And, I mean, he took them on, and he got those integrated. So I don't know whether, I think it was the Chamber of Commerce got together, and before long, I think at that time, he was making a far this job as Mayor Commission pretty
We got the
minimal
salary, $7,000, and they offered
yeah,
him
now the $25,000. Just
get him off.
Boom, that's right, to buy him off. So they would groom him for Washington, and which at that time he was rather young, but again, I say, everything that was thrown at him to try to sidetrack him off of of socialism, he stayed true to his convictions and wasn't maneuvered around by the by the ruling class. Edith Cardell, which is our oldest member here, even on the project, and was one of the first members that he had, Jim Jones had. Edith had come from Nathan Ershon's church, and so when Edith began to come over to People's Temple, her children, her son, was messing around with, had stole some papers and deeds and things to her property, and they were trying to get them off of her, and stating that she was mentally incompetent of handling her own affairs. And Jim got the just a feeling that about Edith, and he called her right at that time, and there was a a detective coming up to take Edith in, and Jim called her just at the same time that this guy was coming up on her porch, and he was way across on the other side of town, and he advised her as to how to handle a situation and talk to the investigator of the situation. But he had come fully in mind to take Edith away, and to kind of get to, quickly through this particular portion of it, Edith then talked to Jim, and over a short period of time, Jim said, "Why, you get him over there." And Jim, by his gift of doing things, he confronted the her son and told him exactly how he had done it and where he had put him. And he got so scared that he gave all the documents back to Edith, and Edith got out of that, which would have been a very trying situation, and it could have been very very rough on her, because there's laws in Indiana at that time that your relatives could commit you to an institution and say you were mentally incompetent of taking care of yourself, and really you didn't have to. There was hardly any. Well, as I know it, there was nothing. You had no recourse on the thing. You'd get stuck in there and you'd be done. But just prior to this happening, I think one of the things that kicked this off, and Jim may remember this after I bring it to his attention, but they had called Jim over, and he asked me to go with him, to Nathan Urshan's church, and he was the head of that district of the United Pentecostal Churches. And so they'd call us in, and they asked, they wanted us to join their organization, the UPC, the United Pentecostal Movement. So they were kind of whining and dining us, so to speak, what you were allowed to do, and what, you know, in other words, well, if we were just talking with them, and Jim said, well, if we come in, you know, what are some of the tenets of your faith, you know, and they were talking about dress and externals and, of course, doctrinal points, and at that point and he had a lot, well, there was a room full of dignitaries, and one of the, I forget the gentleman's name, but he was very high in the United Pentecostal Movement, but anyhow, we got down to the tenets of faith, and they knew that we had always, Jim had always spoke about the oneness of man, you know, the in other words, one family, one concept, and that was their doctrinal point, you know, Jesus only, you know, you know, it's a doctrinal thing. I don't know whether you'll understand that or not, Dick. But anyhow, they knew that we did that, and so that was no conflict there. But we was talking about a one world, you know, concept. But putting it in the addressing of religion, I wasn't hip to that at that time.
No. Yeah.
Thank you. I wasn't really hip to that at that time. I had a smattering of socialism by different things that Jim would say to me and talk to me about when we were on long trips. But it was interesting how devious these people were as we were in their conference. One of their main things that their members were not allowed to have TV. But they said, if you come in, he's speaking to himself, Urshan, he said, I have my own TV. He said, I have it home in the closet in my bedroom. And when I want to watch, he said, I open up the closet and watch it. And then he said, just as long as you don't have it out where people can see, you know, he said that. That's no problem, and but I thought that they had been so dogmatic on their national broadcasting programs of how they browbeat their membership into so many externals, and Urshan had had some affairs and all kinds of things that were just contrary to what he did. But very graciously, and Jim told him that we didn't want to come into the organization. So I think at that time, then he was such a political threat and such a religious threat in the city of Indianapolis that there was a distinct move to try to remove him and kill his influence any way that they could get about it. Something just spurned my... we were on WIBC, and even the program director, he was so smitten by Jim that he would lock, when we would get in to do our broadcast, he would lock the studio because threats would come in because Jim was speaking such a real dynamic message of oneness that I was referring to back here about the people coming together and the economics and the racial issues of Indianapolis. And that was way back when Martin Luther King was had not really got into even his passive movement, hadn't really got off the ground that good. It was right at that time that Jim and I had met Martin Luther King at a speaking engagement out in Indianapolis. But back to the radio studio, people would call in, and it got so intense that he said, "I am sorry, Pastor Jones, I'm speaking about the program director." He said, "If we program you anymore," "we're being boycotted. People are calling up our sponsors and telling them if we don't get you off of the air, that they're going to stop using their products." And it was he said, "I know that you understand it's economics." And so he said, "I got to," but he said, "What you're doing," he said, "I know is right." And this guy said that. I remember our last program out of there, before I come west, but the guy had tears in his eyes, and we would have to grab it like in an armored car to get in and out, because they would lay for us, and we'd have to take different routes in and out. There was a definite plan to kill Jim Jones, and if they possibly could do it. Evidence of that, many times cars would come out of nowhere and ram up behind you, or trucks would come out of side streets and try to blast you broadside, and it was nothing to go out and all your tires would be slashed, so you would be, you know, immobile in a place, and so we just had to count on that, and we would have backup cars standing by and things like that. I think I referred to a situation of, he was going to bury some acquaintance of ours. It wasn't one of our members, one of their relatives or something. Anyhow, we changed cars several times, and he wound up in my car, and they still had him blocked off in an alley, and he got out of there. But I mean, there was always that kind of foolishness. Did I tell you about him dynamiting? Yeah, I did previously. Putting dynamite in the.
Do you have any idea who was behind it? Was it a church element, or a right wing church element, or just whatever?
Well, really, I think the people of Indiana are so stupid, really. Except for those that might be in high places of direction, you could preach a matter that it was. Well, I'll give you an idea of how ignorant I think Indiana is. Indiana National Bank. A man walked in there at noon hour one time, and turned a goddamn shotgun loose on a whole bunch of people in there, and his comment was that God told him to do it. That wasn't an isolated incident. It was like the Bible Belt in that area, and people were not politically aware, and every time you try to make them such, things would come in over race, from the manipulation of downtown and those that were trying to control everything. I told you, I think, about the banks, the lending agencies that had already had it out, that out Indiana Avenue and all out Northwest Avenue, they had that's the only way a black person could get a loan. So they definitely had an economic setup for how they wanted it to go there in Indianapolis, and I think the power structure was behind the manipulation, but also the ministers, because here come along a young man that was energetic, had 8 or 10 projects going on at the same time, doing a full workload, and pastoring a church that was bigger than any of theirs. and saying that it is not wrong. He took a scripture out of the Bible where Paul made tents by day and by night and preached by day. In other words, you should be not, in other words, not ripping off the people for a salary, and not being bridled by the people by taking their salary, that you could speak the dictates of your heart, your conscience, and not be manipulated by economics. And every one of them, they used to slip to him at night. Petty, this Urshan, and there is a dude that is on national radio. He's got a prisoner's program now. Chaplain Ray. Edith Cardell can tell you who he is. He was the pastor of that church before Urshan was there. But they were all, John Price, Pano. I could just go on and on.
Big preachers.
Yeah, these were all had big congregations, and they would call him at the night. They would not want to be seen with him or let anybody know that
they
all kinds of problems, mostly about their own personal problems, that they were going to die, or they had a sickness and they wanted or even advice, all kinds of advice, but they would never want to have him in their pulpit. A lot of the things that they confessed, that they didn't believe what they was preaching, but they said if you don't do it, you can't get in the offerings, and if you don't get in the offerings, the church falls, and where would I be? You know, very personal, selfish.
So Indianapolis being a service there with Jim, it was really bad because there was so much, I don't know what you call it, Jesus was good. He used to like the people, you know, the black people. And I remember an incident when he was into a place eating a black person thing, and they wouldn't serve the man his breakfast. They gave it to him in a box to take on his treat. Jim made him put his breakfast in a box. He went and sat in the middle of the tree and ate his breakfast. And I think it began a whole onslaught of, you know, the Klan was prevalent there in Indiana. And I think conspiracy began even then, to get rid of him, because I was at his house, and I used to get these god-awful phone calls that screeching and screaming at the wish the house had burned down. They told him one time that he'd better watch his little son. I have to be daughter, but they knew she wore purple underpants. And if they saw him in a clothesline or something, when she stepped up on this, they would get her, and the same thing was going to do to her. And Marcy used to cry, you know. Be pathetic, and someone would screech over the phone, and I remember the incident of a woman putting sugar into his tank. And one thing I just remembered, someone took grass and dug all over one of his house where he lived, all over his house. And the priest came, and he refused, they brought the man, they found the man that did it, but he wouldn't put on the charges. He said all he wanted him to do was to clean the walk. And that was what really got me, because back in those days, you know, I was more of a possible than I was there, and I thought something should be done.
So he wouldn't do anything against the people who asked him.
No.
His stance was just to take it.
Just to take it. And turn the other cheek. Turn the other cheek. That's all he talked about, you know. Be loving it. We're not responsible for their actions, but we're responsible for our actions. I mean, an incident in the church once when they... We had a restaurant in the basement of this church, and we fed people. And I don't know, I would guess maybe 1,800. That's the thing that first impression was so much about him. This is the thing I think that threw me to him more than anything else was his son on immigration, his children of all races, and this restaurant. We had this free restaurant where he fed people. And he would gather the food at night, like from the back of these big supermarkets that were thrown out. And he and Marcy and Archie and Rosie would go together and wash it, and clean it, and cook it, and prepare it, and serve it food. We used to see lines of people who were standing in full paper thin dresses waiting to get in. And what amazed me was he would always eat the food himself that he served. And the only comment was when people say, well, Are you required to pray a certain way or drink? Only required that you would be hungry to eat. And he would stand and cook the food. And I know an incident one time when a drunk man came in and he vomited all over the floor. And one of the ladies in the town was kind of religious, and she never started praying, and, oh, God, help this drunk man. And Jim was so practical. It really got me. He went over and he got a wash rag and ran out. He wiped his face and cleaned the floor. And he took the man home and gave him clothes and dressed him up. And the man thanked him. And the man said, well, now I can go into my own church. I lived there. I went to the Presbyterian church. You know, I felt my own selfish thought. I thought, well, maybe he would feel like he should come to the... I just think if I was somewhere in a man like me, I might want to attend his own church. But,
it didn't bother Jim, did it?
No, didn't bother him. He said that, you know, he was judging and be loving. And I just thought he was, I think, someone told me once, they were trying to criticize him, and they said that when he felt, he was a very respected leader in the community where I was from. And he said, Jim only has one fault, and he said his heart is too big.
He said that?
He was a counselor of a school.
And what town was that?
In Columbus, Ohio.
And they knew Jim in Columbus, Ohio?
They knew Jim, yeah. That's where I met him.
I see. What year was that when you met him? Remember that time?
I think I was 29, I'm 49.
20 years ago, I think.
Yeah. And,
58, okay.
I know in this restaurant, we get free food, and he would ask people if they could donate anything to feed people, because he served us 1 meal a day. And he was working downstairs one day, and I was in the kitchen, and a lot of people left him during his time because he took such a stand on immigration in Indianapolis, Indiana. And when he began to serve free food, parishioners left him because they felt, I remember one woman said she did not like the smell of cabbage cooking when she was in church on Sunday. And another lady said she would give him, she said she would will money to him if he would just keep Archie, he's black, off of the pulpit.
Do you have anything?
No, I don't.
Okay, go ahead.
And Jim said, don't ever try to compromise the spirit of immigration. And he was furious. He said that Archie would be more and more, and he would increase the staff. But I'm trying to think what I've been on there for. I would guess over 50 hours. Gathering the food, having service, going out at night, picking up the food from the back of the stores, taking it home, thoroughly washing it, keeping it clean, keeping it fresh, rub which he did himself, cleaned his own toilets, because one incident, I was there and the toilet stopped up, and I asked him if he could get the janitor. And he said, why? I said, well, someone has shit in the toilet. And he walked back, never said a word, stuck his hands down in it, cleaned it off, and mopped the floor. Now, I knew then that by his example, a worse study is by his example, not by mandatory rules, but by example, but did something because it was right.
This is your clean toilet.
What? You took all the children on a camping trip.
Two different times you remember, okay.
That's just nothing. And I remember cleaning from the floors, cleaning the refrigerator. There's nothing in my memory of that. You wouldn't do nothing. There's nothing. I mean, one time, I didn't know how to say it was here or here or here. The other one, if we go to be at someone's place, you know, like we were staying with someone, Marcin would be there. He was always the first one to do the dishes or mop the floor. Whatever had to be done, he did it. He never was critical of us. You know, you should do it. He just did it. But we were in the church, in the basement of the church, and cooking meals. And I could see his burden was really heavy because they were working hard. Marcin had a lot of children. And he was standing there peeling potatoes. That's all I recall in my mind. He was peeling potatoes. And someone came up to him, and a lot of people were waiting in line to eat, and he was trying to get the food together. And someone said, it was laughing. And they said, you are just too much. He said, well, and the sweat was dropping off of his head, and I could see he was tired, and Marcin was standing in the kitchen. And he said, Jim, do you really think all those goddamn people that you're feeding are worth it? Do you really think they're hungry? And he could see they were just antagonizing someone, they're trying to do something right. And he laid the knife down, thinking, he said, his face was absolutely in agony. He said, no, I don't think they're all hungry. He said, but if I find out that one out of 10,000 is hungry, then I know that all this work is worth it. And that's when I joined. I think I joined the position I've ever seen. Because I would never in all my life met anybody. But I've met a lot of preachers, and I've heard a lot of talk. And I've heard a lot of priests, and I've heard a lot of professors. I've heard a lot of lectures. And he always told me what should be done, and his philosophy, and gave me all the ideology of brotherhood, and what you should be, and a lot of generalities, and a lot of little things. Shakespeare said, and Jesus said, but that was on Sunday, but on Monday, it never worked. It never, it was only ever encouraged me when my children were small, when the sodium vaccine first came out, and there was a hell of a thing going on over the nuclear, the radiation belt, and Dr. Spock had a little pamphlet out. Do you remember any of this?
No.
Dr. Spock had a little pamphlet out and showed the pictures of the Vietnamese babies, and told me what happened to him after the war. And I went out and stood in the corner in the Catholic Church. They were giving out sodium vaccine that day. Do you remember when?
No.
Okay. I don't remember that year, but I took my child with snowing in Columbus, Ohio, and our hands were cold. My baby was about four. We stood on the corner for hours. I took a double shift to hand out these little pamphlets. And even the time I was in, the people who were so cold, the people of that area, the teachers, the lecturers in the Hanford University, he said they were 4 feet. Wouldn't take those kind of shifts. They didn't ask the meaning of things. People carrying the papers up. I remember once that they tore papers from the preacher and threw it in their face. And my inclination was to hit them. But Jim taught me that you didn't ask that way. Well, I told you that he said to the man that another time when a man came to him, and he was a mile away. I can't recall it now. He was like nine. It was four. And he said, someone told me that you would help me. And we were in a meeting of some sort, it was about 6 or 7, and Jim gave him, I think it was about $400. And when the man got up to left the room, Jim turned around and looked at us, and his face was pain, and he said, he'll betray me these 4 or 3 weeks ago. And I said, I wanted to give him a goddamn dime then. He said, then you don't understand me at all. Not at all. He said, I'm responsible, and the money might have been more than that. He said, I'm responsible for my action. That's what I'm responsible for. Not his reaction, but my action. And what he does, he said, I have to give truth. In other words, he had to show him the highest. And he said, the man had 4 little children. He was losing his business. It had to be saved. And it probably more than 400. Hell, I remember thousands of occasions we'd be in service and someone called and say, they're going to take my house away or my wife is sick. We used to go clean people's house. We cleaned up Baptist couple's house one time, the man was